Welcome to But For Real, a variety show podcast co-hosted by two therapists who also happen to be loudmouth feminists. I'm Valerie, your resident elder millennial child-free cat lady.
And I'm Emerson, your resident chronically online Gen Z brat. And on the show, we'll serve up a new episode every other week that will take you on a wild ride through the cultural zeitgeist, mental health, and beyond.
You'll definitely laugh and TBH sometimes maybe cry a little because this is a silly and serious show.
Buckle up, my friends, and let's get into today's episode.
What if the thing you've considered a personality flaw for your entire life is actually just ADHD? And believe me, I'm not about to be that person on the internet telling you that every random thing you do is a sign that you have ADHD or autism or complex trauma. But we do see clients who have suffered a lot before getting clarity on their needs. And for these folks, therapy and, yes, medication can often be a game changer. Today, we are interviewing Dr. Chanel Thomas, the founder, CEO, and clinical director of Blue Sage Wellness, a multi-state psychiatric group practice that provides culturally affirming, high-quality psychiatric care to communities historically failed by mainstream mental health systems. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my God.
Thank
multi-state.
Multi-state.
Yes, I am. Okay, cannot wait to dig in with you. But first, we're going to jump over to our tea and crumpets where we tell folks what we can't shut the fuck up about recently.
Absolutely.
And I can't even remember if I mentioned Project Hail Mary, which I had finally read recently. That was tea. So now I get to watch the movie since I finished the book. But I am also now most of the way through the first Dungeon Crawler Carl book. And I think my friends are like, really? You're into it? I'm like, yeah, I'm digging it. And now we have like half of our work team is reading it, and so now I feel like I'm a little in the club, so really enjoying myself.
Awesome.
Yeah, what's your tea, Chanel?
Well, I've been binge reading One Piece. I'm not sure if y'all are familiar with One Piece. I'm not going to go to the whole spiel, but it's a manga and it's animated as well, so it's animated, so a lot of people can watch it on TV. But it's an anime about this character named Luffy. He wants to be king of the pirates, and we like kind of follow him throughout his journey to trying to become king of the pirates. Right now, we're in the Elbaf arc. I'm not going to do like a lot of spoilers, but it's kind of like where the land of giants are. And like a lot of things are happening and unraveling. And this is an anime I've been watching since I was 12.
Damn.
It's still ongoing. There's like 1,200 episodes.
Holy crap. I will not be starting that episode one.
But everyone says, but like you really have to. There's a lot of underlining themes of like racism, patriarchy, liberation, and all those things. So like it's really, 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 really
amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's me with Grey's Anatomy. I'm like, it's too late. Yeah. Like, I can't.
Absolutely.
But I also agree with you that like, I could never start a show anywhere from but season one.
Exactly. You have to. But like, there's filler episodes, so you don't have to watch the filler. And I usually recommend reading it because you skip over all the like flashbacks and things and fluff. Yeah.
What about you? Okay. Big news. I'm officially a Lego adult. I feel like it took me a long time. I didn't Lego as a child. I guess I just wasn't really into it. I don't know. I think the ADHD, I just wasn't able to sustain an activity in that way. But now I feel like I'm getting like a little fun flavor of my ADHD with Lego now as an adult where I'm like, oh, this is great. I can do this whole thing and not do any of the other things that I really need to be doing right now. So I made a peace lily and it's so cute. And I have always wanted, I've had like two peace lilies and I've killed both of them. They're really dramatic bitches as plants. They just really piss me off so bad. So now I'm like, you know what? I'm not wasting my money on peace lily because I can't kill this one. So, okay, let's get into a little bit of step into my office where we take a listener submission about anything that they want to submit about. We read it, go through it, give a little bit of advice because it's kind of hard to do that in the day job sometimes. And it's always way more fun when we have a guest to weigh in too. So let's get into it. Dear M, Val, and Chanel, I think I might be the most functional person I know who is also barely functioning. I have a good job. I pay my bills. I show up to things. I answer emails. I make lists. I have approximately 47 different productivity apps on my phone. And yet somehow I am constantly exhausted, overwhelmed, forgetting things, procrastinating until I'm in a full-blown panic, and feeling like every basic adult task requires approximately 400% more energy than it should. I started wondering if I have ADHD, but then I immediately talked myself out of it because I did well in school, I have a career, and I'm not the stereotypical can't sit still version of ADHD I always pictured. I've also wondered if maybe I'm just anxious or burned out or lazy or bad at being an adult. How do you actually know the difference? And at what point do you stop trying to get your shit together and realize you might actually need help? Sincerely, overthinking and underfunctioning.
Yeah. Initial thoughts.
Yeah. So my initial thoughts is like, I hear this all the time.
Sure.
And I've been working with like high functioning people, high functioning professionals, doctors, lawyers, things like that. Right. And the kind of good grades narrative, and that I'm not crawling or climbing up a tree. I usually like, well, I talk about myself a lot because I'm like, okay, yeah, I did honors classes, AP classes. Like I was high functioning, but that was also like my interest point. Like I actually liked academia, at least at that time. So oftentimes, what I see is people in different stages of life, whether it's somebody who has ovaries and hitting menopause, there's that hormonal shift that can cause those like symptoms to arise, right? I'm kind of taking off the veil of what's going on with them. Or somebody's hitting burnout or their systems are no longer working for them. And that's kind of where those symptoms emerge, like that ADHD executive dysfunction. Or I have a history of being able to accomplish so much and do so much, and I'm like the most functioning person in my life and people rely on me. But then all of a sudden, my systems are no longer working. So oftentimes, like I investigate, okay, were you scaffolding throughout your life, right? Did you have systems when you were younger, like parents reminding you, agendas, teachers reminding you, you were sitting in the front of the class, right? You were not necessarily climbing up trees, but you were really active in school. Like you were playing sports, you were in band, you were in marching band. Like you were active in different ways that were
constantly writing notes to your friends.
Constantly writing notes to your, you know what I'm saying? So you're active in different ways. That's not necessarily you running around. Right? And all of a sudden it feels like, okay, my systems are no longer working. And then that's when it's like, there must be something going on.
Yeah. And with the burnout piece, like, I feel like one of the buzzwords out there is adrenal fatigue. So is that like a real thing? And if so, like, what do we do for our little baby adrenals?
So 100%. I usually talk about referencing specifically cortisol. Because a lot of people know like cortisol is that stress hormone. But it's all tied into so many things in the body. People don't recognize that. You're operating on stress if you're needing to do 40 different things, or if you're the person a lot of people rely on, or you're needing all these productivity apps. That's a sign that something in the system is not working for you and can lead to, like I said, stress. Signs of that, we say like burnout or adrenal fatigue, like that could look like not sleeping very well at night, kind of some brain fog that comes up, feeling very irritable, like pretty quickly as well, or like memory loss. And some people may be like, okay, is this ADHD? And that's where I ask, like, well, how long has this been going on? What has the, with regards to like the timeline, like is something going on at work? Well, a lot of people got laid off and I'm taking on a lot of extra responsibilities. Something's happening in my family right now. And then I'm like, okay, well, like, I mean, we're looking at a lot of stress going on, right? Raise cortisol levels, and that can impact a lot of different things, cause like adrenal fatigue as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier the hormonal piece of it. And I'm like, I swear my algorithm is so full of perimenopausal shit, which like, yes. And also it's like the cool thing for content creators and brands to be talking about and selling a shit on right now. So I'm just like, okay, how much of this is just sometimes I'm just a little bit of a bitch and that is what it is. No.
Yeah. So, well, and even like, and that would be fine. But my whole thing is like, is this perimenopause like unveiling this untreated, undiagnosed ADHD?
Totally.
Or is this hormonal shift itself? Because that hormonal shift with regards to like decreased estradiol levels or estrogen levels can cause brain fog, irritability and stuff. So it's like, which one, or is it both?
Because it's going to, it could impact whatever the treatment plan is.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we are diving fully into our DSM. And in this DSM, all varieties of dysfunction, spiraling, and meltdowns are welcome. And of course, we are talking all things psychiatric care, mental health with Dr. Chanel. So
starting off, I mean, this idea, like this listener shared about people who are like technically well functioning, like going to work, paying the bills, maintaining relationships. This idea that like, okay, if I'm keeping the wheels on the bus, then like things are fine. But I know that you also, like you said earlier, work with a lot of high functioning folks on the outside who maybe on the inside are still struggling quite a bit.
Absolutely.
So what is that idea of high functioning often conceal? And how do we know when functioning is not the same thing as being okay?
Well, I love that you said like functioning on the outside, but on the inside. And that's usually when people come to see me. They come to see me because something's going on internally. And they still have their job. They have a great job sometimes, right? Or sometimes they have moved from job to job because they're trying to find that kind of fit in terms of like, they're like, I'm trying to navigate work-life balance. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean, right? But yeah, they have their relationships. They have their friends. Some of them have children and things like that. And they're like, well, on the outside, like everything is going afloat. But it's like afloat with regards to like my nose is above water. Yeah. I'm still breathing.
I'm treading.
But internally, like I'm treading water, right? Like internally, like I'm in 8 feet of water. My nose is above. But like all it takes is someone just to dip my head down. So internally, what that could feel like, I have a lot of people may feel like anxious, internalized restlessness, feeling overwhelmed, having problems starting something. Like, oh, I can do like all the easy aspects of this activity, right? I can maybe order it and it can get here, but then it's like I got to put it together and stuff, and it's just sitting in my office for weeks or months. When it comes to like other people, maybe it could do things for like other people because there's that added responsibility.
When there's external accountability required, like accountability and we pressure. Can do the thing.
I can do the thing.
Yep.
But if it's something for myself, it's not going to get done.
Oh, intrinsic motivation. Yes.
It's not there.
Know her.
It's not there.
Don't know her.
So that's typically what I see. And it gets to a point for that person where it's like, this isn't sustainable.
Yeah.
Like I've been doing this for months, years. I've been trying to figure out ways and nothing is working.
It's right.
Not sustainable. Or they have not created the systems and put those systems in place to figure out what's going on. And that's with regards to executive dysfunction at baseline. It doesn't even have to be ADHD. It could be like depression, anxiety, burnout, like executive dysfunction exists in all of those things.
Yeah.
So that's typically what that looks like.
Okay. Kind of on the heels of like executive dysfunction, let's talk a little bit about ADHD because I feel like I'm still doing a lot of myth busting around it.
Oh, absolutely.
Within myself also, like totally. You know, people feel like they can't have it because they've done well in school or we're high functioning or I'm a lawyer or this or that.
Yeah.
Or I'm not bouncing off the walls.
Yeah.
I always, I never did that. What does ADHD actually look like in adults, especially the people who have spent their entire lives masking or compensating?
So I typically work with, again, like high functioning adults, but specifically work with like Black and brown, queer and trans people who are masking in a method to survive kind of their surroundings already off the rip. And in terms of being Black and queer myself, like growing up, I have ADHD combined type. So that's hyperactive, impulsive and inattentive. And for me, it looked like if I didn't do or if I acted a certain way, like that would result in like me getting a whooping. Like that's what it was.
Yeah.
So masking was like, okay, I know I can't do this thing so that I'm not going to get trouble at home. However, my teachers used to say to my mom, she was like, oh, Chanel is such a great student. She just talks too much.
Yeah.
And that's something that could be present in adulthood, right, as well. Some people think like, oh, I'm just like really extroverted and you know, that's it. Some people may be like, no, you do talk a lot or you do interrupt me or like they notice they've gotten in trouble because they interrupt their friends or their friend called them out on it. Their partner called them out on it as well, interrupting. So that's one thing that can, one way it can present in adulthood. Another way it can present in adulthood is, like I said, that internalized restlessness. No, I'm not like running around climbing up trees or anything like that, but maybe I'm having a hard time sitting still. Maybe I'm rock a lot while I'm sitting. Maybe if I'm in a 3-hour lecture at college, like I have to like get up and walk around, leave the lecture hall for like 5 minutes so I can get some of this restlessness out. Another thing, like maybe I'm having problems focusing. Someone's talking to me and I am not following what they're saying. Or I'm easily distracted. Like if my phone buzzes, I can look at my phone. Someone was talking to me and I'm like so focused on my phone that I don't hear them, right? So kind of some of those things can be presentations in adulthood. Oftentimes where we say something maybe like pathological, something's wrong, is if it's starting to impede their personal lives, their occupational life. When I say personal, with regards to like relationships with others, or it's causing them significant distress. So if I'm doing those things and I'm like, I don't feel like internally distressed, nobody's getting upset with me or anything like that, I'm not getting in trouble, then I'm not going to necessarily say like, okay, you have a diagnosis. But if, even if it's just me, like everything else is fine, but internally, like I am distressed and it's impacting me.
Yeah.
And that's impacting me. Then that's where we say like, there's a possibility of having ADHD, and there's criteria obviously that, you know, somebody would have to meet, but those are some of the presentations that we would see like in adulthood. That's not necessarily like running around and yelling and things like that.
Yes. So I have one more follow-up ADHD question because I always want to ask this for like every expert in this topic. I struggle sometimes with like, where are the lines between the neurodevelopmental disorder that is ADHD, which we sort of have enough science and research to tell us like that is a thing. There are brain differences between these individuals versus those of us who maybe did not have those symptoms before age 12, who have rewired our brains through constant hyperstimulation with devices and all the things and may exhibit the same types of symptoms, but it maybe was not a neurodevelopmental disorder. So it's like, what do we call that? And do we medicate it, et cetera?
Yeah. So I would say yes and no to what you said, not even to the last part in terms of medication, right? But yes and no in terms of the beginning. Going back to like the research and science that like studied the brain differences and stuff like that. Oftentimes we talk about like ADHD as a dopamine deficiency, right? That is a theory. And then we talk about like research science. And it's like, okay, well, who are the people that they did the research on, right? In terms of presentations. I mean, the DSM, they updated. It used to be below age 7.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that it was that like, low.
Age 7. And then they updated it to below age 12. And I imagine whenever they update it again, that may change.
Probably.
The age may go up a little bit, right? But it takes someone who's been working with ADHD for a long time, you'd say like maybe an expert, to like find the nuances and get the context of ADHD. Yes, like we were talking about, like high functioning ADHD presentation. Even when I was younger and like, you know, a nurse, I wouldn't say like someone that had like was in AP classes and honors classes, like I'd be like, no, you didn't have those symptoms. You were excelling when you were younger, right? But I recognize like, wait a minute, were they scaffolding? Did they have, like I said, those systems in place to allow them to be successful? If those barriers were taken, like, and I asked, like, if you were in a regular class and wasn't honors AP, how would you, you know, be like not being challenged? They probably would have been like really bored out of their mind. They probably would be more restless, right? Or even like activity. So when we're talking about, like you're saying, in terms of like, well, what about this kind of later in life presentation?
Yeah.
You really have to distinguish, is this actually later in life, or did the systems or the scaffold kind of get removed and now it's kind of presenting? So you got to do a lot of deeper investigation.
And I think that's certainly the case with a lot of people.
Yeah.
But like, what about this bucket of people who may look back and be like, no, I really just think my brain changed as a result of this constant like technology and hyper-stimulated world we live in? Like, I guess it just, to me, it feels like that is equally as big of a problem.
Oh, yeah,
both things can exist. But the second bucket, like maybe isn't ADHD and maybe shouldn't be treated as ADHD, but it still has a lot of the same internal distress.
Well, something that's really great about the brain is that it can heal itself. So then I talk about like heal itself to a certain extent, depending, right? So then I talk about like, okay, what happens if we remove the phone? What happens if we delete the apps? And I'm like,
would that we could. No.
Yeah, right. If we could, right? But if we delete it, like,
totally.
Like, what happens in terms of like your cognition, right?
Right.
What happens in terms of like your engagement and your productivity, right?
Yeah.
And I put productivity in quotes because I'm like, that's capitalistic.
Right. Yeah,
concept. Bullshit.
Right. Which arguably even the whole concept, like we had a whole episode recently on attention activism, the whole concept of productivity and even attention like wasn't even really a thing until we're talking about the attention of workers and how we can maximize that.
Absolutely.
Gross.
Yeah, exactly. So I would look at that, but then I would also investigate like more context, like what else is going on in that person's life.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you said, like, would we medicate it? It depends on, like, how distressed that person
right.
is. Because sure. there's some people that are like, I've tried everything. I delete the apps that I've added.
Yeah, you know, I will.
Like, I need something else.
Yeah.
And that's definitely an option as well, but it wouldn't be, like, the standard stimulant medication we would use for ADHD or
right.
something else, mm-hmm. potentially, to help with focus.
Okay.
Love it.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. What changes for the people that you work with when they finally have an explanation for some of these things that they've experienced for years?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you wish people understood about getting diagnosed maybe later in life?
Grief.
Yeah.
The first thing is grief. It's, oh, okay, finally I have this answer. But the immediate second thing, even for myself, is grief.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, well, had I had this answer earlier on, like what things could have changed, like what could I have been doing by now, and things
right.
like that, right? So that is some people don't even think about grief as like something that comes up for them. It's always like, I just want the answer. I want this explanation and validation, right? And they get that, but immediately, like in the next second, they're like, wow, I wish I would have known this sooner. Like, could you imagine what I could have accomplished had I known this? And then, when we go, if someone's interested in medication management for their ADHD and we try it, that's kind of that other aspect of grief when it's like, this is how normal people think mm-hmm. and process things. I know for me, when I first took medication, I couldn't believe it. I was in shock. I was like, y'all don't constantly have like someone like
yelling
at you, like you constantly have that, y'all don't exist like that.
Yes, it's how other people feel.
I got in trouble at my old job. I was a nurse practitioner at a community clinic, and I would see like 20 patients a day, but I kept like going to other departments. I would not close my notes. I kept going to other departments to talk and chit chat. I'm thinking I'm being like friendly and extroverted. Yeah, I'm just like, having a great old time, yeah. Getting in trouble because my notes aren't
those
closed.
Notes ain't done.
Yeah, right. Getting in trouble for that. And then I was getting in trouble in a previous relationship, all those kinds of things. So I finally was like, let me see a psychiatrist. In like 10 minutes after talking to me, he was like, Chanel, you have ADHD, like clearly. And I didn't believe him. I was like, there's no way. But I took the medication with a lot of hesitancy. I took the medication finally, and it was just like this cloud.
Mm-hmm. I'm just picturing away. Like the graphic of
it was
the heavens open.
It was exactly what it was. It was exactly what it was. And I was so distressed because I was like, what the heck? I actually like saw my patients, closed my note. And I was in this corner. I was locked in getting my work done. I was getting praised by my mm-hmm. bosses, of course, which made me mad because I'm like,
yeah.
Really? Like, this is how y'all like me?
Yes.
Quiet. Quiet, doing productive. Work.
Obedient.
Exactly, right? But also, I was kind of thinking, like, I was doing laundry, and, like, I didn't take me, like, 20 times to, like, rewash it over and over. Yes. I just kept forgetting. It was great. And I hated it. Because I was just like, for me, at least, I was just like, dang, like, I've lived my whole life into adulthood, and, like, it took this long to get this answer.
Yeah.
So one of the things that often shows up with folks who maybe are hesitant to explore the possibility of medication, whether it's for ADHD, depression, anxiety, whatever, mm-hmm.
is they're afraid that if they start a medication that they're going to have to be on it forever.
Yes.
Or maybe there are some people who feel like medication is the first thing that actually helped them.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's people who sort of still are holding on to that old idea that like, if I need this, then I have somehow failed mm-hmm. at coping, and I don't mm-hmm. want to just like press the easy button.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So how do you approach just this general conversation with folks who have this hesitation? What do you wish more people knew about psychiatric medications?
Yeah. So there's a lot of stigma with regards to psychiatric medications, a lot, especially in like Black and Brown communities. So one of the things that we talk about with medications is it's not a cure-all.
No.
It's not like medications is going to do maybe 50% of the heavy lifting. So I tell all of my clients, like, you need to have a therapist on top in terms of, like, processing things. Like, this is going to hopefully get us to a point to where life becomes more manageable, whether it's, like, anxiety, depression, ADHD, anything. Like, life becomes more manageable. You're not at risk of losing your job anymore. You're not at risk of a divorce. Right. But then you add in the therapy with regards to like processing things, learning skills, coping, healthy coping mechanisms and things like that. I'm processing like traumas because oftentimes when people come to me, I'm like the last resort for a lot of people because they do feel like, OK, if I'm taking medication, that means I'm failing or there's something really wrong with me. And I get asked, like, is this medication forever? And honestly, it depends.
It does.
It depends. Some people, they take it periodically in the season or like in a season of their life, like when they're going through a lot of hardship. Some people have to take the medication for the rest of their life. It really just depends on what's going on with them. Definitely talk about like the lowest possible dose and also working in collaboration with people to know that they have autonomy in their care. I often and my colleagues give more information than most clients want and give them the options with regards to pros and cons of medication. If you're going to take something, if you're going to try something, I want you to be involved in the treatment plan, like what medication is that you're going to take and try. Here's five options. Here are the pros and cons of each. Which one do you like a little bit more? Because that's part of the psychiatry that I don't like is that it's trial and error as well. I know what the medication is supposed to do, what it's for, what it's stated for. I know what the side effects are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But until someone takes it, like I'm not 100% sure like how they're going to feel, they're going to benefit from it or not. I'm usually very, very confident like this is what it's supposed to be for. This is what's going on with you. And this should benefit you in this way. But it's until they take it and then we reassess like how do you feel now that you're taking it?
Yeah.
Some people fear or have hesitancies with regards to like, am I going to lose my personality, right? Or
that's the 10th thing I talk the most about. Like, am I going to have full-blown anhedonia? Am I just going to be numb?
Mm-hmm.
More so I talk through with that with everyone who's like, I don't want to take an SSRI.
No, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, everybody.
Yeah.
So I talk about that with people too. And I'm like, the thing is, if that does happen, we stop it. Change something else. It's that simple. It's that simple. It's not like it's going to stay and persist, at least with the SSRI.
It's not going to change you permanently.
And then some people I've had, like, you know, I'm not crying as much and I'm not like super happy. Like, I'll crack a smile, but they're like, this is 10 times better than what it was before. And I'm like, but there are other options. Like, we can try something because I want you to have the full range of your emotions. I still want you to cry. I still want you to feel anxious because these are normal emotions,
right?
To have. But at the same time, like, I want it to be, get to a point to where it's not impeding your day-to-day as well. So with regards to hesitancy, it's collaborative. And then even, like, with a therapist, I'm like, it's not just me and you. You're going to have another person on this team as well. It's going to work with you. So, yeah.
One of the things that really stands out to us, of course, about Blue Sage is that you're not just treating somebody's symptoms in isolation. You talk about culture, identity, lived experience, and the systems people are existing inside. What does it actually mean to practice psychiatry from a decolonized or anti-oppressive lens? And how does that change the way you understand what a patient or a client is bringing into the room?
So the first thing, like, what it means to practice in that way is really understanding, just to simplify it, like context of the patient's experience.
Mm-hmm.
If I go off of symptoms, like someone tells me like I'm depressed, I don't sleep and, you know, meet criteria for whatever diagnosis, I'm like, okay, you meet criteria for this diagnosis. And per this diagnosis that was written by like a lot of white psychiatrists, and per this diagnosis, this is the medication that you should take. And you have no options. There's no autonomy in terms of like what medication you're choosing, things like that. So, like I said, to keep it simple, like context, I need to understand, okay, you're saying you're depressed, you can't sleep. Like, what's going on in your life? What's happened in your life? Sometimes I ask, like, before you've been born, like, what was your parents' life like? If you're familiar with them, what were their parents' life like? Whereas, like, we talk about maybe country of origin, I go to, like, what state are you from? Like, oh, you're from Alabama. Like, that's a different life than someone who's lived in Tennessee versus someone who's lived in New York all their life. In context with regards to, like, what is your family's views on mental health? What are your views on mental health, right? And then also context with regards to, like, their relationships with friends, intimate partners, family, their religious viewpoints and things like that. Like, it's getting a lot of context. So I have this beautiful painting of this patient that I'm seeing prior to coming up with a treatment plan, because the treatment plan should always involve their spiritual beliefs, right?
Yeah.
The, whatever practices that they are, that they practice. Medication, if that's something that they're interested in exploring in. And then, like I said earlier, you get a lot of options with regards to that, because there's, I think, seven SSRIs I can think if I'm trying to name them, come up with the numbers, about seven SSRIs, right? And majority of them are FDA approved for depression and anxiety. So it's kind of like, okay, what's your pick? But then also it's like, okay, like I know from my standpoint, like this medication can cause insomnia and you're telling me you're having problems sleeping. So I'm probably going to cross that one out, but I'm still going to offer it to you. But then I'm saying you're having problems sleeping and then it causes insomnia and they're going to be like, y'all, well, I don't want to take that one. Yeah. So there's more like buy-in as well, right? With regards to like working in that model and talking about kind of some of the, I don't, in terms of like anti-oppressive, there's already inherently a dynamic that like I'm the provider and they're the patient, right? And again, that goes back to like, I'm not going to make the choice of what medication they should take unless they're like really like, no, please tell me, like I need you to tell them. But so I operate very relationally in terms of our sessions. Like it's not Dr. Chanel Thomas. Chanel's fine. I don't come in wearing scrubs or like a white coat. Like I literally dress like this during my sessions. And I open it up to where like it's a safe space. We may cuss together. We may talk about like anime and things like that. Like it's very relational in the sense. Obviously boundaries are there, but there's relation. It's very relational. Yeah. And then with regards to like barriers, when we're in the office, like we're seeing each other for maybe 30 minutes to an hour. And then what are you doing in the meantime, in between time when you're out of here, right? Or you see your therapist for like an hour. What are you doing in the meantime, in between time when you're out of there, right? Like you have these 2 hours and then you see us like, you know, maybe like every 2 weeks or whatever. So I talk about like, okay, so what are some barriers in terms of when you leave here? Are we talking about like there are financial struggles, right? Barriers, can I provide resources? Housing insecurity, can I provide resources? Food insecurity, can I provide resources? Lack of friends or like, challenges in terms of like that social, like are there some free events going on that like maybe you would enjoy? So it's inclusive of all of, thank you, it's inclusive of all of those things, and it's not simply like you come see us and here's your medication and go home,
right? We're just talking about your symptoms and your presenting problem. It's like you're looking at the entire human being. You're being a human being in the room.
Exactly.
And then any of us should feel comfortable stepping into that kind of case management role of like, hey, I can't just like give you the prescription or even the coping skills and just expect you to be fine if you need housing or
that's not what's gonna fix everything,
right? So, okay. Chanel, take this out. But for real,
like ADHD presentation, it doesn't just exist in this hetero cis white normative like depiction that oftentimes like we learn or see or hear of on TV or even on TikTok, Instagram, right? ADHD can present in folks who are Black and brown, queer and trans in different ways with regards to, like I said, that masking those symptoms in case of survival. It can exist much more internalized, or maybe it shows itself when like you're in a room with people that you're more comfortable with and that it kind of presents. So that's kind of my
Yay. Okay. All right. Let's hop on over to our musical segment. Now, that's what I call, okay, where usually when it's just me and Val, we share our songs together, but we just prioritize our guest song because you're the special guest. It's typically a song from your generation or a song that you're just really loving or feeling spiritual about. So Chanel, tell us about your song a little bit, and then we are going to live watch the music video together and we'll debrief.
Yes. Okay. So it's Served by X Love. So X Love is a K-pop group. They have a genderless concept. So all members are genderless. They use any pronouns, and they are up and coming K-pop group that's getting like a lot of traction really this year. So I've literally been obsessed with them. I've watched all of their like podcasts that they've been on, and like I've watched every single music video of them. So they're amazing.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yes.
Wait, I'm excited. We love watching the music videos.
Okay, yeah. Y'all are really gonna...
We're in for a treat. That was fun. Yeah. The style? Wow.
Mm-hmm. And seeing them, I've seen like recorded live performances, and it's like even better.
Amazing. So, okay. Listener, make sure you go on our Spotify playlist and listen to this track.
The aesthetic.
Okay, and now we're jumping into our dumpster fire, Phoenix, because y'all, it is dark out there and we need to go dumpster diving for some good news. And I would say at least once every couple of months, we've got to get a good cat or dog story in there.
Oh, yeah.
So I went hunting on the Good News Network and discovered a lovely story. Very heartwarming. There was this poor, tiny, sweet little dog, Teddy. Go look him up on the link will be in the show notes. Sweet little small dog who was lost for 3 weeks on a mountain in rural England's Lake District.
Oh, my goodness.
And Helvellyn is the third highest peak in the country. Helvellyn.
Right.
So they had postered everywhere, but this poor dog was still like not sighted for 3 weeks. And then on August 21st, just the other day, volunteers were out searching for him. They heard barking coming from this steep ravine on the side of the mountain. So once they located him, he was unreachable. So the whole mountain rescue team had to come out. 3 hours later, sweet Teddy was rescued. He had lost a bunch of weight, but he had no injuries, and he's now getting lots of treats.
That is horrific.
Oh, my gosh.
But I love a happy eye.
Yeah, no. So happy with that, but I love
a happy ending.
My goodness.
So what's yours?
I kept mine basic, and I was like kind of embarrassed, but then I realized, I was like, no, I should celebrate I have an 80-day streak in Duolingo.
Wait, I forget already which language.
Danish, of
course. Okay.
Danish.
Well, so, yeah, it's been fun. I feel like I've been learning. I kind of hate the app. It, like, bullies you.
It is seriously an asshole.
It's seriously
insane. The owl or whatever. His name is Duo.
Yeah.
Okay. He is a bitch.
No, he's a bitch. Like, I have the widget, and the widget will be like, Emerson, really? And it'll have like an angry face, which is kind of hilarious because I'm like such an ADHDer that I'm annoyed. I'm like, fuck you. But I'm like, I have an 80-day streak. So like, it's working.
And you know, in the future of augmented reality, Duo is going to be like popping up onto your pillow at night being like, girl, you know, your streak is at risk.
Yeah. Duo is going to be with like stroking my face and being like, you didn't hear what's going on. Oh my God.
And I'm like, hey, so at what point did I need to click off on the settings to allow you to populate into my bedroom and stroke my face? But okay. All right. Let's close out with a little rapid fire Q&A, a little pew, pew, pew. You're trapped in a horror movie, but you get to choose one fictional character to protect you. Who are you picking?
I mean, it would have to be I would have to say like, I'm going to go off. Like the anime characters.
Yes, of
course.
It'd
be Luffy to protect me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. What's a hobby that you love that you wish more people would check out?
Anime.
Also anime? it's on brand, folks.
Anime. Can I just like literally like it's like all my answers. Anime, watch anime. Like, I mean, but people, it is like getting traction. Like more people are watching anime. Yeah, so like that. So yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You can instantly become an expert at one completely useless skill. What are you choosing?
Useless. I don't think there's really any skills that are useless.
But like, I'm thinking of those boys in school that could flip their eyelids up.
Okay. Well, I was going to say like the tongue thing where people can like do like the W with their tongue.
Oh, like the
Yes.
I think that's so cool.
Okay. Also useless. Mm-hmm. What is your most irrational or inconsequential, like, I will die on this hill opinion? I'll tell you mine as an example. I think every fucking toilet should have a manual flush option. Why do some of them only have automatic and then you're standing there just waiting?
That's a good one.
That's a really great one. That's a really good one. That does piss me off also.
Well, mine was going to be anime related.
Please.
But it was like everybody should watch One Piece.
One Piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the anime.
Yeah, that's the one with the 1200.
1200. Yeah, so I'll die on that hill. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, you get one free plane ticket, but you have to leave tomorrow and you can't tell anyone where you're going. Where are you going?
Probably Nigeria.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've been really wanting to go there. And yeah, that would be, because nurse practitioners only exist in the United States, I believe Australia, maybe not, but really in the United States, but Nigeria allows nurse practitioners. Okay. So I could at least work. I could work there easily, transfer my skills.
Okay, last one. If you could permanently delete one minor inconvenience from your life or all of existence, like tangled headphones or having to hand wash certain dishes or group texts, what are you erasing from the universe?
From the universe. It's not even just me. It's for everybody.
Ooh.
I would probably say like the dishes. Like, right. And the, I mean, that's not a minor inconvenience. That's a major inconvenience.
Daily.
100%. Every, yes. Like if you could just eat and then it just automatically is clean.
Yeah. That would be everything. Laundry. This is a concept ADHDers everywhere yeah. are willing to just replicate. Like,
yeah.
ADHD
you can just turn around. Luckily, I feel so blessed and fortunate that I have a partner that does dishes. So that does happen. So it's like I eat and then there's more clean plates and forks.
Love it.
Thank you all so much for having
me. Dr. Chanel Thomas, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was amazing.
This has been another episode of But For Real, hosted by Valerie Martin and Emerson Ryder and edited by Volt Productions. But For Real is produced by the Gaia Center for Embodied Healing. The Gaia Center offers individual, couples, and group therapy for clients across Tennessee and in person in our Nashville office, as well as coaching and other programs for clients worldwide. For show notes or to learn more about our work, visit gaiacenter.co or find us on Instagram at the Gaia Center and at But For Real Pod. But For Real is intended for education and entertainment and is not a substitute for mental health treatment. Also, since we host this podcast primarily as humans rather than clinicians, we are not shy about sharing our opinions here on everything from snacks and movies to politicians and social issues. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. See you next time, bestie.